I want to begin my presentation and report here by saying thank you to you as a church for giving me the opportunity and for your prayers of support for us as we traveled and ministered there in Peru. We don't take those lightly. We are very, very grateful for your allowing us to go, number one, and then also supporting us in prayer as well. It was indeed an amazing trip. Many of you have asked how it was, and it's hard to really put it into a few words. And I've had a few opportunities to talk with some of you a little bit on a little more extended basis. Well, tonight's kind of going to be that coming to fruition in a more extensive manner here to our entire congregation. I want to start by saying, too, that there were two goals, anyway, that I had in going on this trip. One was to be a blessing to the missionaries. Our primary invitation from the Baptist Missions field of Peru was to come and minister at their missionary conference, their annual conference that was designed to be an encouragement to the missionaries, where they would gather once a year. All the missionaries from the field get together annually to do that. So that was our primary goal. That was the primary invitation, and I trust that that was the case. I've said before that ministry to missionaries is ministry to multitudes, and so if we were in any way, shape, or form a blessing and encouragement to them, I trust that that will then trickle down into their churches and their other ministries. They did express appreciation to me, but also to you as a church for allowing me to come and be that encouragement and blessing to them. I'll talk a little bit more later about some of the specifics of how we were able to minister to the missionaries. My second goal was to gain a greater burden for missions and for those missionaries by seeing firsthand what God is doing in Peru. And God indeed is doing some great things in Peru. And there is something about actually being there that transcends hearing about it or reading a prayer letter or even watching a missionary presentation. There's just something about actually being right there to see what God is doing in the mission field or on the mission field of Peru. And so I think God fulfilled that goal as well, to get a greater burden for those missionaries and for missions by seeing what the Lord is doing there. Our first destination was Lima, and Lima, Peru, is a massive city. It is the largest city in Peru. It is one of the largest cities in the Western Hemisphere, as a matter of fact. Depending on who you ask, it is approaching 10 million people. As a matter of fact, part of the challenge of counting those people is because of so much immigration that's occurring right now. Into the city and into the environs around the city, that it is hard to be precise. But just to give you an idea in relationship to 10 million souls, this is a night shot of the city. 10 million souls, there are 30 million people in all of Peru, so a third of the country lives in one city. And as a matter of perspective for us as Americans, when you think of 10 million souls, you realize that that's 1.3 million more people than New York City. New York City is the largest city in the United States. Los Angeles only has about 4 million people, so 2.5 times Los Angeles. Chicago has about 2.7 million people, and Houston has about 2.4 million people. So that just kind of gives an idea of the immensity of this city and how many souls, and that's the way I like to think of it, not just people, okay, but that there are 10 million souls right there in and around Lima, Peru. And so we're grateful for the opportunity we had to minister there, either in or around Lima, our first week of ministry. We were greeted at the airport by the Templetons. They are long-term missionaries. At least Stan is. Stan's first wife is actually Judy Folks' sister, who passed away a number of years ago due to some health issues. And so Ruth is Stan's second wife, and Stan has been there for quite some time. They are veteran missionaries, very involved not only in church planting, involved in two church plants, but also in the radio ministry. If you can, again, imagine a radio station that preaches the gospel to 10 million people, because it does. It reaches all of Lima. And so that's been a big, big ministry, and God has used that in wonderful ways over the years there in the Lima area. So we were grateful for the Templetons. We got to stay with them for the first few nights and then minister alongside of them on our first Sunday there. After getting acclimated on Saturday, we were there, and this is a brand new baby church. It's neat to see how missions is fleshed out there on the mission field, even by the people within the churches, because Stan pastors and is a missionary in another church that we were in the evening. Well, this church is the daughter church of that church, And there were a group of people from the larger church, the mother church, who lived in this neighborhood. It's some distance away from the existing church. And so they approached Stan about the possibility of starting a new church. So this, actually, they meet in a city hall type of facility. And this church is not that old. Of all things, they meet at 8 o'clock in the morning. And if you know anything about Latino culture, that's not normal. To be up and about and out and part of a church service that early in the morning, it says something about the commitment level of these folks. And even the Templetons, on a normal Sunday, they are out the door by 6:30 in the morning to ride the bus to get across town to Callao, the neighborhood where this new church is getting started. So we had the privilege of being there and being a part of that service. Stan was preaching through a series, and so I didn't preach that morning. I just got to sit there and enjoy it. I actually sang special music in English and in Spanish, and that was kind of my little role on Sunday morning so he could continue his series on the life of Christ in this young church. Then we had the opportunity to be in the mother church Sunday evening, had the opportunity to preach there through an interpreter, translator. One of the assistant pastors, a young man, is standing off to my left. His name is Giorgio. And God is using him as one of the team there. He is a native Peruvian, and he did a great job interpreting, translating for me. Sometimes that can be a bit of a challenge, especially. It's not ever the translator's fault. It's usually the preacher's fault for saying too much, going too fast, all those things. And he just did a fantastic job. So that group of church folks that evening was probably over 150. And so it was neat. As the service started, it was about two-thirds full. By the time I got up to preach, it was full. And so people just kept trickling in, and getting, and this was probably even taken before it was completely full, before everyone was there. So it was great to minister. It's just such warm people, welcoming, smiles on their faces, very gracious in their demeanor, and we appreciated the warmth with which they greeted us. I did make the mistake of saying that hablo Español un poquito, and so a number of them, which means I speak a little bit of Spanish, a number of them came up and tried to have entire conversations with me in Spanish, and so that was a little bit of a challenge for me, but we made it through with their little tiny bit of English and my little bit of Spanish, and enjoyed that interaction with those, and or I would then call for help from missionary when we got to the point where we were no longer communicating and didn't really know what was happening. After that, then, we headed to the camp. Alcayama is a city outside of Lima, and that's where their camp is in that region, outside of Lima. And that was where our primary focus would be then for the next 5 days. That's where the missionaries were gathered. This is a picture of the roadway going. This is actually the entrance to the camp. You can see these tall walls on each side. And that is the entrance to the camp. As we drove down that dirt road, and one of the first things we saw was the chapel. That's where we would spend a lot of our time preaching the word in that chapel. We had the opportunity of staying in this nice little cabin and cozy little spot, and appreciated the hospitality of the missionaries there. Hospitality like things like this, including a mosquito net to protect us from any biting insect that might come along and might be carrying something that we didn't really want to take home with us to the United States. And so we appreciate that protection. That was not the only protection. We also had missionaries that were well-skilled in the disposal of whatever might come along, okay? This actually didn't arrive at this camp. This was actually at the second camp, but that was part of the welcoming committee at the second camp that we were at. And an adult MK disposed of that little guy in a hurry. We appreciated Martha Stillwell and her quick actions to take care of the welcoming committee. So those are all things, though, that you kind of have to be ready for on a missions trip that are a little bit different than Northeast Ohio. As I said, our primary focus was these folks. These are the missionaries. This is the team of missionaries who are ministering there in Peru, and they're a wonderful group of servants of the Lord. I had the opportunity of preaching 9 times. In the morning services, 4 times in the mornings, and then 5 times each evening. We would have just the adults together in the mornings, and then the adults and the teenagers together in the evening, and just thoroughly enjoyed our time together in the Word. Of course, MKs are a part of the ministry as well, and so there were individuals that would take the kids, and actually they got to do a vacation Bible school style of ministry in English for the MKs, and the MKs thoroughly enjoyed that. We appreciated the Scotts. Steve Scott is standing off in the left corner there. He was actually a professor at Northland when my wife was a student there. He taught math, and so Ruth had not seen him since being a student in 1990, so it was neat to kind of catch up with a former professor of hers. He's teaching at the MK School, Fetzer Memorial Christian Academy there in Lima, and ministering to kids. And so it was great to even get to know the families and the kids. You know, part of the week camp was also fellowship. So it wasn't just about, oh, we're going to have business meetings and we're going to study. That's all we're going to do. There were also wonderful game times. I got in on a game that I hadn't played since I was a youth pastor. They talked me into that game, and now I've forgotten the name of it. Mafia. How many of you have ever played Mafia? All right. I had not played that game since the 90s. And of all things, Ruth Templeton in her 60s was the queen of Mafia. She was phenomenal at playing that game, and actually Stan wasn't too far behind her. So it wasn't just a kid's thing, it was for the adults as well. This is not Mafia going on here in this picture, but that was something fun that we enjoyed during the relaxing times and the fellowship together. We also enjoyed some meals together. There was actually a night where just the adults got to go out for dinner. We had an early service, and then we went out for dinner that night together, and that was a special time of fellowship with these missionaries. At that restaurant, we tried this dish. I'm not even going to try to mention what these are all called. I'm looking at the folks here, and Sue Ellen Kane's back there. She's been a missionary in Peru as well. Is this saltado? It is saltado? Okay. It's good. Okay. Let's just put it that way. It's very, very good stuff, and great meat, and the French fries are right there mixed in, kind of like a stir fry. And so we did our best to sample and try everything. We're not the kind of folks that want to just try to find American food when they're on a foreign mission field. So we enjoyed this that night at the restaurant. We enjoyed a number of other dishes. This is a fried fish. This was in Lima, right very close to the ocean, at a restaurant that we went to. And I have to confess, your pastor, while he was in Peru, tried weed. Okay? I'll admit it. That was seaweed, okay? Just in case you're wondering what kind of weed we're talking about. That's actually seaweed on top of, fried with the fish. There is the seaweed that I did sample, and it was basically flavorless other than to taste like fried food, okay? I also tried octopus. Why not, right? While you're there, I tried squid as well and a number of other things. And at a later time, we tried alpaca. It tastes a lot like deer, like venison, actually almost identical in its flavor to venison, so I gave that a shot. My wife tried most of these things, too. She wasn't quite as adventurous as I was. I didn't actually eat this time. I had eaten this in a previous time. Anybody want to guess what that is? Not squirrel. It's guinea pig. Yeah, why not? Right? Cuy is what they call it in Latin America, and I didn't have it this time. But I have had it before. It tastes like a mixture of, like, halfway between chicken and cat, okay? So it's kind of like a mix of that. But well, when well-seasoned, it tastes quite good. You're asking. You're wondering. No, I've not eaten cat, okay? We have been fattening our cat up, Lola, and she's looking kind of tasty. But no, I haven't eaten cat. I'm just kidding. All right. But our reason for being there was to minister, and this is just another more close-up shot. These are actually all folks that have at one time or another attended and or graduated from Faith Baptist Bible College and Seminary, my alma mater. And I said, let's get, and we don't have all of them. Some of them had already had to leave, and so I think there were three or four others that were not there for the picture. But just appreciate these missionaries and their servants, them being servants of the Lord, and appreciate my alma mater in terms of faith training so many missionaries for the field. This represents somewhere between a third and a half of the field that are graduates. And part of why we as a church support a college like Faith and a seminary like Faith is because God is using them to train servants of the Lord for places like Peru. And so we're so grateful for the opportunity to minister to these missionaries. You know, David Stillwell, who's standing in the front, the redhead kind of off my left shoulder, he was in the dorm with me at Faith. His brother all the way to the right was my roommate. He was a junior when I was a freshman at Faith. The poor guy, he had three freshmen, the one upperclassman with three freshmen. I think we were all his projects. And I'm thankful he took on this project called me. And John now is the regional administrator for Baptist Mid-Missions for the Spanish-speaking portion of Latin America, and appreciate the great job that he's doing as that. But we enjoyed renewing fellowship with some that we hadn't really spent a whole lot of time with for quite some time. To the left, our left, up toward the front, the older couple are the Stillwells. I'll talk about them in a little bit. They were best friends of my wife's parents in Bible college back in the late 60s and early 70s. And because of them, Ruth's family has had a connection with Peru for many, many years. Ruth's dad took 4 different trips to Peru and was very involved there. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I appreciate these servants of the Lord and the opportunity we had, hopefully, to hold up their heavy hands by ministering God's word to them and being a blessing and encouragement to them. So our first week was spent in the Lima area. The second focus of our ministry was in Trujillo. Lima, of course, as you can see on the map, is right there on the coast, right in the center, the largest city, and then Trujillo is up the coast a considerable distance. When we were making plans, David Stillwell said to me, "Now, Pastor, it's about an hour flight from Lima to Trujillo, or it's about an 8-hour drive. Which would you like to do? It's only about $100 to fly. So you want to fly?" I said, "Well, what are my options for driving?" He said, "Well, you can ride with us. We'll have plenty of room, you know, 4 spots, and there's just my wife and I, and so you can ride with us, or you can fly. It's fine to fly." I said, "You know what? I want to ride with you. I want to see Lima, or Peru. I don't want to just fly over it." And so we appreciated the opportunity that we had to make our way. It was about an 8-hour drive. Driving in Latin America is not like we think of it in the United States. We were on the Pan American Highway, okay? It is a 4-lane highway, but it's still, with speed bumps and all kinds of other things that slow you down, it's not quite the same as it is here. So, and the view is unique too. And then I did not realize that one of the world's driest deserts is the desert that lines the western coast of Peru. They don't get rain. I mean, in Lima, for instance, it sprinkled a little bit one day, and people were shocked. And that was it. I mean, that's a big rain for them for it to sprinkle. As a matter of fact, one of the missionaries told the story about the fact that she remembered a child crying because they were scared when it rained, because it's such a foreign thing. And on top of it, if they're a poor family, they have a house made out of adobe bricks. And what happens to adobe when it gets wet? Adobe can actually start to fall apart. Actually, the little child said, "Well, aren't you scared of rain? Doesn't your house melt when it rains?" And so it is a unique climate. Anything that's green is only green because of irrigation out of the Andes Mountains. Everything else is sand. So if you can picture, our drive was desert to the right and ocean to the left. That's the Pan American Highway for that 7 to 8 hour drive that we made up the coast. And these are just some examples of some of the sand dunes that were being moved around by the wind coming off the ocean, and the beauty and unique way of those sand dunes and others. And here are just a few more pictures. Like I said, I wasn't fully prepared for that. I knew that it was kind of desert-like and kind of dry, but I wasn't fully prepared for that that type of a setting and those types of vistas as we made our way up the Pan American Highway from Lima to Trujillo. This, then, is our second day's destination. This is the city of Trujillo. Trujillo boasts about 1 million souls, and this is actually a picture taken at night. I took at night from the rooftop of one of the churches, 4-story church, open rooftop, had the opportunity to shoot a picture of the city of Trujillo, 1 million souls. We had the opportunity of being in 2 churches. This is Jonathan Stillwell, my college roommate from my freshman year, who pastors this church and is doing a fantastic job there. He is doing double duty with pastoring a church, teaching in seminary, triple duty, and then being the administrator. They're working toward handing that church off to another pastor, and for him to kind of step away from that with his responsibilities as a part of the administration. But appreciated John and his ministry and the warmth of the people there. That was the case everywhere we went, just how warm and welcoming they were, and the opportunity we had to fellowship with them briefly. It was neat for me, too, because in the morning Sunday school hour, this young man presented his missionary ministry. He presented to the church. He had come to the seminary that is there in Trujillo to train. He was from Colombia and was going back to Colombia to plant churches. And so he was presenting that ministry, trying to raise support to be able to go back to plant churches there. And just to see that cycle of missions was exciting, and I don't know if you can read the statistics, but he has on that slide off above his head the population of Colombia and the population of Bogota and how few of churches there are in Bogota. I think it was something in the range of 60 of one type of Baptist church and another like 30 of another, and that's of a nation that's far larger than Peru. And so he was very burdened and was communicating that burden. And so it's neat to see how the churches of Peru are duplicating themselves through the churches themselves, but also through the seminary. The seminary in Trujillo, here's a picture of this. The folks were very involved in that ministry when they were there. And almost every one of the missionaries serving under Baptist Mid-Missions is involved in a combined ministry, at least the men are anyway, in a combined ministry of planting churches, pastoring churches, and then teaching in a seminary. Almost all of them are doing double duty that way because they see the importance of evangelizing and starting churches, but they also see the importance of training leaders who will then be the pastors of those churches or will be going into regions that need additional churches planted as well and training those church planters. And so it's neat to see that ministry of duplication through the seminary, and even this young man that was so burdened to go back to Colombia and start churches as a graduate of the seminary. Bible college is probably the more appropriate term, but seminario is what they call it in Spanish, and that culturally is the term that they would use. This is the director, and I know this man is near and dear to the folks because he told me to say hi to Pastor Esteban and to greet you. He is now the director, and it's neat even to see that, too, the transition to Peruvian leadership of the Bible College is there, to a sign of God's hand. That is Steve Stillwell giving him a big hug and them standing there so they can get their picture taken, and we appreciate that. We appreciate then that resulting in products like this young man going back to places like Colombia. So we had the opportunity to minister in one church in the morning, and then in the evening, I preached in the evening at a second church. I know the picture is relatively small, but the picture there on the left is of David Stillwell, and his church is four stories high. It's very narrow, typical Peruvian style, because land is extremely expensive. They sell it by the square meter, not by the acre, and sometimes it may be $2,000 or $3,000 a square meter. If you want to just think of square yard. That type of expense, and so they'll buy a small plot of land and just go up. And so this church is four stories high, includes the parsonage on the third story. And so we had an opportunity to minister there, to preach, and David translated for me. And just, again, wonderful group of people meeting together on a Sunday night, and a great opportunity to fellowship with them as well. One of the things happened almost each time I preached, especially in the churches, is they expressed their appreciation. The missionary who was introducing me expressed their appreciation for this church because of First Baptist's part in being a part of the birth of Baptist Mid-Missions. You may not realize that 99 years ago, a group of pastors met in a prayer room of First Baptist Church when it was downtown in Elyria to talk about the need to start an independent Baptist mission agency. And it was the fruit of that meeting and their prayer and that little prayer room and their organization that then birthed what became Baptist Mid-Missions. And so part of the introduction for me typically in a church was that he pastors First Baptist Church of Elyria, where Baptist Mid-Missions started. And think about that connection to these believers, because if it hadn't been for Baptist Mid-Missions, for many of them, they would not have heard the gospel. And so there was a tremendous just spirit of appreciation for this church and for the pastor of this church to be able to come and minister to them, because they realized that, boy, if it hadn't been for the missionary that came from Baptist Mid-Missions coming down here, I might not have gotten saved, my family might not have gotten saved, and so on and so forth. So their deep-seated appreciation was very, very evident, and we appreciate that heritage that we have here at First Baptist, as well as the wonderful heritage of Baptist Mid-Missions. That was Sunday. On Monday, then, as God planned it and put all the details together, then we had an opportunity to go to the second camp, and this is in the Trujillo region. This is the camp where Ruth's dad had spent a few trips and had done a lot of things just to help out the camp, even helping send a tractor there and different things like that. And so when Richard passed away, the family decided they wanted to give memorial funds, monies, to build another cabin. They asked the Stillwells how they could help at camp, and the Stillwells said, we need another cabin. Specifically, we need a speaker's cabin, a place for the preacher of the week to be able to have his own place so he's not in with campers or staff or whatever, have his own place to go back and study and review and pray and be ready for his next preaching assignment. And so this, with funds from Ruth's family, this cabin was then built. And that's Ruth's mom standing in the doorway. It's a beautiful little cabin, very nice. And they completed it, I think, a day before, maybe 2 days before we got there. We were told that's very Peruvian. Get it done at the last second. But it got done, so that's the main thing. And it was neat just to be a part of that. And part of it for us was then there was a dedication service. And I had the opportunity of speaking. These are all those that were in attendance, Ruth there in the front and her mom to her right. And then also a team from our home church where we grew up in Minnesota had arrived that day, not just to be there at the service, but then to spend the next week doing building projects at the camp. Most of them had never been there. And so it was neat to see some of the folks that we knew from growing up days and their participation as well as their pastor being a part of that. So we got to be a part of that and say a few things in relationship to Richard's burden for missions and their love for Peru, and what a wonderful thing it was to dedicate that that cabin. It was neat, too, to hear some of the pastors. These are three of the pastors who are also the board members of the camp. We were also there for the week. It was the beginning of their senior high week, Jóvenes, and so they were just starting that week of ministry, and each one of them spoke and expressed their appreciation. I'm pretty sure Steve Folks married at least one of those guys to their wives. The guy to the right, isn't it? Is the guy to the right? Yeah, because he expressed appreciation to you as well. And so it's neat to see those connections and their appreciation for this camp and the generosity of the Merrill family. This is them then inside of it. The ladies spent the next week painting in that cabin and painting some other things as well as a part of that work team from the Chatfield, Minnesota church where Ruth and I grew up. And so second part of our ministry was there in the Trujillo area. And then God took us down to Cusco. And Trujillo and Lima are right on the coast. Trujillo and Lima are hot. It was quite warm there. I know you do not feel sorry for me at all because I know what you were suffering from here. So I get that. But it was quite hot there in Trujillo and Lima. But Cusco was the opposite. Cusco was a little more cool, not as cool as here, obviously, in terms of temperature. But our third focus then of ministry was in Cusco. Trujillo and Lima right on the coast. Cusco up in the Andes. Cusco is situated at about 11,000 feet elevation. And so if you can kind of imagine that in terms of how high up in the mountains that was. Beautiful vistas, though, of the city. Again, about a million souls that live there in Cusco. It's a growing city. Great opportunities to plant churches and great opportunities to reach people for Christ. And things just keep growing. One of the things that I noticed about Cusco is Cusco's outgrowing the valley. It's situated in this huge mountain valley, and they don't have much farther to go other than up the mountainsides. And so actually the next church that our missionary host is planting is what's called Alto Cusco. Cusco is the Quechua Indian Incan type of word for Cusco, and Alto means high. And so it's up in the higher parts of the city there. And so that city with a lot of people that need Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. The Cockrells were our hosts there. Aaron is a local boy. He grew up in the Smithville area at Pleasant Hill Baptist Church. And we had been acquainted. They presented here at the church as they were about to leave for the field. Actually, we thought about taking them on, but they were already at 100% support. But they hit the ground running their first term, helped out with the completion of a church that graduated to be pastored by a Peruvian, and they are now in the very beginning stages, the first, I think, 6 months or so of their second term there in Peru, and it was great to spend time with them. Aaron is a go-getter with a great passion for reaching souls and for reaching Cusco especially, and so he was excited to take us around town and show us where their current church plant meets. This is a temporary building. Someone's allowed them to use it just to pay the utilities. That's all they have to do. It's up a dirt road, which the day we were there, it had rained quite a bit, so it was up a mud road there in the higher regions of Cusco, and they have about 20 people in attendance at that ministry, at that brand new baby church, and we're excited to see God use them in that very special way. Of course, it's not just about buildings. It's not just about planting churches in terms of a physical place. It's really about reaching souls. And as I saw this lady sitting on the side of the street, I just couldn't help but think of her in terms of a needy soul. And of course, that's representative of every person on the planet today, okay? Every person that needs Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. That is why the missionaries are there. That's why we're here as missionaries to our own communities, is for the sake of those that need Jesus Christ as their personal Savior. And so that, of course, is the burden of Aaron as he thinks about places, a permanent place for their building, for their church plant. He wanted to show me some of those. There was one five-acre plot that was going for $1 million that they didn't think that was going to work out. But that gives you an idea of how expensive land is there. 5 acres, approximately, whatever that ends up being in square meters, for $1 million. And so that probably wasn't going to work out. But there was this location that he showed us and told us about. And God has provided. They already have $200,000 set aside approximately for that purchase of that land when the time comes and God's timing is right. And so God's people back here in the States have given very generously, and we're excited for them and appreciate just getting to hear Aaron's passion for Cusco especially. Aaron then took us off. We headed then from Cusco to Urubamba, which is a city where the other Bible college is located. It was an interesting drive in that there was a labor strike. The farmers specifically were striking, and they announced it ahead of time. They tell people, we're going to strike, and we're going to block every road in and out of Cusco. And so on Monday and Tuesday, they blocked every road in and out of Cusco. We didn't know that they weren't just going to block them in and out of Cusco. They were going to block them for the next 100 miles down the road. And so it made things interesting. We were traveling on Wednesday. The strike officially ended Tuesday night, but they left everything that they had used to block all the roads just laying there. And so people had to come along and cut the trees up and move them out of the way. And this is us trying to climb our way out of the valley that Cusco is located in. And there's this huge traffic jam. And we weren't sure what was going on because these trees have been cut and moved off to the side. Well, we walked up a ways to find out what the problem was. The problem was is they had taken this huge mound of dirt and put it in the way in a three-way intersection. So three roads all going in and out of Cusco were to pass through this little spot where they had dumped a huge mound of dirt. And so three lanes, three different travel portions all trying to get through one thing, and one poor traffic cop trying to keep them organized. If you can imagine that, I probably should have showed you the video of all the horn honking that was going on. That, of course, helped a lot, because to honk your horn really makes a big difference in moving traffic more quickly. It doesn't. As a matter of fact, people standing there watching and gawking, which that was also the case, that didn't help a whole lot either. But eventually, a big payloader came along and moved that pile of dirt and made it so that there was more free flow of traffic, and we were able to make our way. One of the things that God taught me in Peru is don't get in a hurry and don't be impatient, because you'll just get frustrated if you're in a hurry and you're impatient. And I tend to be a person who's always in a hurry. And so it was good just to sit back and say, okay, we'll get there when we're supposed to get there, Lord. And I appreciated Aaron's spirit that way too, as our guide, so to speak. And so that was a part of our Peruvian missions trip experience. On the way to Urubamba, where the Second Seminary Bible College was, we then got to see the church that Aaron was a part of. The Watleys had started this church, and then Peruvian pastor and Aaron came alongside and assisted with that, and that church now is pastored by a Peruvian. So it was neat to see that, a church that had graduated from missionary status and was pastored by a Peruvian. And so our destination, next destination, was the Bible college there in Urubamba, which is up in the mountains, not too far from Cusco. And these are a couple of pictures, and they're doing the same thing. It's a little smaller Bible college. There's actually a camp right there, and so they were in the midst of their camp season. They were having a family camp, and we got the tour of the facilities and got to meet some of the pastors that were there and enjoyed that. Once in Urubamba, we weren't very far from a place that I was encouraged to visit. I was told by Steve Folks, if you go to Peru, you have to go to Machu Picchu. I was hesitant to do that because I said, this is a missions trip. It's not a tourist trip. And he said, no. The pastor, take a day or two and go to Machu Picchu. So we did just that and enjoyed that opportunity. These 500-plus-year-old ruins that were part of the Incan Empire that are intact. They were only discovered about a century ago. We didn't know they were there. And just an amazing vista of a combination of God's creation with the mountains and the fog looming there, as well as the ruins of this ancient civilization, the Incan civilization, that many of the Peruvians are the descendants of that civilization. And so even at Machu Picchu, though, God taught us some lessons. And I want to conclude with one of those lessons and then some other spiritual lessons by way of kind of a devotional tonight as I wrap up. Because part of what we wanted to do as we went was also say to the Lord, what do you want to teach us through this missions trip? What is it that you want us to learn? And so Here are four spiritual lessons that I think we can all take to heart tonight in relationship to this trip. The first one is this, that sadly, what replaced the Incan religions does little to point people to saving grace through Christ. By going to Machu Picchu, we did learn a lot about the Incans and how they worshipped. This is a statue of an Incan warrior, and he's surrounded by three of the deities. The primary deity that the Incans would have worshipped was the sun. Okay, but secondarily, there were lesser gods that they recognized and that they revered. And so you see this Incan warrior, and above him and around him are three different animals, the condor, who rules the sky, and the puma, who rules the land, and the snake, who rules the underworld. And those were considered kind of demigods, if you will, lesser gods that were part of their worship. And we'll talk about what replaced that here after I show you some more pictures and explain a little bit more about Incan religion. At Machu Picchu, as you get to see the ruins up close, you come across things like this. This is what was referred to as the Sun Temple. And in the middle of that sun temple is an altar. And of course, you realize that they sacrificed animals, yes, but they also sacrificed human beings. As a matter of fact, if you were a part of a competition, and you're, quote-unquote, if I can use these terms, if your team won and you were the captain, guess what? You got to be sacrificed as a statement of honor for the fact that your team won. Now, I told somebody jokingly today, I think I would have told my guys, hey, let's take it easy today, okay? It's okay if we lose, all right? But animal sacrifice, but also human sacrifice was a part of their ancient worship. This was a sun temple because there are two windows situated in this temple where on the two solstices of the year, the sun comes perfectly through those windows and shines on that altar. And we took the long haul up the mountainside to what's called the Sun Gate, because up on the, I think it was the western slope, I'm not sure the exact direction, you know, so many feet above the ruins of Machu Picchu is this gate, and the sun would come through that gate so far away, probably a mile plus away, and would shine then through that little window and onto that altar as a part of their worship. This is the Sun Gate, and so you can see in the picture on the right, the ruins of Machu Picchu, where that little green spot right in the middle gives you a little bit of an idea of how far away it was, and you see the sun shining through from the other angle. And so that would have shined through on the winter solstice and the summer solstice, and that was a part of their worship and also a part of their sacrifices, which included human sacrifice. So as horrific as that is to us, that they would have worshipped the sun god and worshipped these lesser gods and committed horrific things like human sacrifice, the sad thing is this, is that, as I stated, what replaced the Incan religion does little to point people to saving grace through Christ. It's not a whole lot better. Yes, humans are not being sacrificed, so it's better. But the end game in terms of whether or not people are going to be in heaven as a result of it or in hell as a result of it is not a whole lot better. When we were then back in Cusco, in our final day in Cusco, we got to go downtown, the downtown area of Cusco, and this is the oldest church in Cusco. It's a Catholic church, and it rests right on top of the foundation of an Incan temple. So if you look at the bottom two layers of stone, you can see the gray ones and then the ones below that are a little bit more brown. Those are Incan. Those are 500 plus years old. And so this church was built right on top of those Incan ruins by a church that teaches the way to get to heaven is through works and through the Mass and through baptism and through all these rites of attempting to somehow merit God's grace. And so it's really sad that of course, is the predominant religion. And of course, if you know anything about Catholicism in many countries of the world, they have really mixed their Catholicism with the worship of the area, and so they've taken what's called a syncretistic approach, and so let's take our Catholicism and mix it with the worship of the sun gods. And so one of the things that he mentioned, that Aaron mentioned, is on this day where the Incans would have worshipped the sun god, there's still a big processional and parade to observe this, and the Catholic Church helps lead that. And so it makes no sense in terms of that strange combination of the observance of holidays revering a sun god. And so Unfortunately, what has replaced the ancient Incan religions really doesn't do a whole lot more in terms of the eternal destiny of the people of Peru. So that's the first thing that was just an observation of mine. And let me also say that's a Catholic church. The other thing that struck me was that there are Mormon churches all over the place. Where we were staying in Lima, just not very many blocks away in La Molina, there was a huge Mormon complex, a training center, and perhaps even, I don't know if they referred to it as a temple, but a huge place, beautiful place. And almost, I mean, without exception, as we drove around Lima and these other three cities anyway, we would see Mormon church after Mormon church after Mormon church after Mormon church. So the Mormons are evangelizing Peru, taking a false gospel that will not result in somebody coming to know Christ as their personal Savior. So how sad it is that what replaced the ancient Incan religions doesn't really point people to the saving grace of Christ. But the second thing, the second lesson is takeaway is this, that God, though, is still in the process of drawing people to himself from every tongue, tribe, and nation. Revelation 7 is in the context of the tribulation, but I love that verse because it talks about how there will be people worshiping around the throne of God from every tongue and every tribe and every nation, and how exciting it was to hear stories in the churches of people that come to know Christ as their Savior, and the great job that not only the missionaries are doing, but the pastors and the local churches, and even just the burden they have, let's go start another church in this neighborhood, let's go reach people in that neighborhood. So it's thrilling to me to see how God is doing that in a wonderful place like Peru. God is indeed at work in places like Peru. He's in the process of drawing people to himself from every tongue, tribe, and nation. The third lesson is this, and I know that's a less than complimentary picture of myself, all right? But I put it up there for a reason, all right? The third lesson is that people everywhere need to hear the gospel from our lips. 2 Timothy speaks of preaching the word in season and out of season, when you're ready and when you're not ready. We had gotten up that day at 4:30 in the morning. That was the day we were going to see Machu Picchu, and so we had to get up really, really early to catch the bus and all that. And then we proceeded to hike around Machu Picchu up the mountainside above to the Sun Gate, over to the Inca Gate, another direction. We proceeded to hike, and according to my Fitbit, we hiked over 10 miles, and we did over 277 flights of steps, according to Fitbit, okay? I didn't count them one at a time. So I was tired. And so we sat down on the train at the end of the day, and I said to my wife and to Aaron, man, I'm tired. I hope nobody sits across from me. The way they have the train situated is it's clusters of four. There's a table in between, and you have four people together. And so my wife's next to me. Aaron's across from my wife. There's an open spot there. My feet are up underneath the table, up on the seat across the way, and this is what I'm planning to do the whole train ride home, or for the hour and a half back to where we would pick up our ride back to Cusco. I was tired. I didn't want anybody to sit there. Well, guess what? God had totally different plans. And so I don't know if Ruth nudged me, if I just happened to notice him. He probably just noticed him walking by, and the gentleman had that seat. And so I took my feet down. I greeted him and welcomed him and woke up and began to just initiate conversation with the man that God put across the seat from me. His name was James. And James is from New Zealand. And James is on a worldwide tour with kind of a twofold purpose. He sold his bar and restaurant and made a lot of money from that in New Zealand. And so he's seeing the world. But the other thing that James is doing is James is trying to find and figure out what he believes. He's looking for spiritual experiences, actually. He told us that. Part of why he went to Machu Picchu was to see if he would experience something ecstatic. He even talked about how, you know, I was disappointed because I didn't get any tingly feelings up and down my spine like I have some of the other spiritual places that I've been to. And so we had the opportunity for an hour and a half with me fully awake, not looking like this, okay, to engage James in conversation, asking him questions about himself, about New Zealand, that then bridged to me asking him if he had any spiritual beliefs, that then bridged to me being able to share the gospel. And with him asking question after question after question, this is a man who really, truly is trying to find out what the truth is. And he said, I used to not think there was a God at all, but boy, there are just too many things that have happened in my life that can't be coincidence. There must be a God. I'm just kind of trying to find him, so to speak. I'm paraphrasing what he said. And so what a great opportunity it was to answer his questions and interweave the answers with the gospel. He asked questions like, now, there were 20 of us, my mates and I, as he called them, that were camping together as a part of this trip. And there were 20 of us, and we had the conversation about, what does Christmas and Easter have to do with Christianity? And he said, none of us could answer the question. Can you imagine that? A group of 20 people, and they weren't just from New Zealand. These mates, as he called them, were just people from all over the world that were touring the area as a part of this tour group. And they're sitting around a campfire, and nobody has the answer to what Christmas and Easter are about. That they know that they're loosely associated with Christianity, but they don't know why. And so we got to explain to him Christmas, the celebration of Christ's birth. Yeah, it might not have happened on December 25th in reality, but we observe the incarnation and explain why Christ then had to come. And then, of course, Easter, the crucifixion of Christ and the resurrection of Christ and the significance of that in terms of the gospel and having a relationship with Christ and forgiveness of sins. And it was beautiful how God put James right there across the seat from a tired tourist. Okay, that's kind of what I was at that moment, but also a preacher and a child of God and someone who wanted to share the gospel. So pray for James. He and I exchanged emails. He was coming to the United States, to California, and we're going to email back and forth. And I pray that, and I told him about, he could watch our services online, live stream. He didn't know what a Baptist was at all. I got a kick out of him. When we explained to him, you know, that we were Baptists, he's like, so is that Christian? I'm like, yes, this was early in our conversation. That's Christian. And so he grabbed a hold of the fact we were Baptist, except for he didn't use the term Baptist. He referred to us as baptisms. So you guys are baptisms, right? You're baptisms. We weren't going to correct him that we were Baptists, not baptisms. But that's okay. But that just gives you an idea. And he didn't know anything about the Bible. He did decide he had one. But then he's like, now, how thick is the Bible? And then we're like, well, you know, usually it's pretty good size. He's like, I got a thin one. And I'm not sure where I got it. Maybe from my grandparents once upon a time. Is that the whole Bible? So I explained, it's probably the New Testament. And and I could go on and on and on about an hour and a half conversation. A great opportunity. So pray for James. And at the same time, we need to be people who are instant in season and out of season to preach the word and to share the gospel. People everywhere need to hear the gospel from our lips. One of the lessons, third out of four lessons from this trip. And then the last one, and we'll wrap up with this, I know the hour's late. The last one is this, that a robust commitment to the Great Commission will result in evangelism, discipleship, church planting, leadership training, and the reproduction of churches. We tend to sometimes just think the Great Commission is share the gospel. And that's part of it, but it's more than that. A robust understanding of the Great Commission is all of those things. And I say that because I got to see that up close. I mean, it is a part of the DNA of the churches of Peru. This whole idea that it's my responsibility to evangelize, it's my responsibility to disciple, it's our responsibility to train leaders, and it's our responsibility to start churches who then in turn start churches. So when a church starts, in their DNA from the very beginning is someday we're going to start another church. And someday that church is going to start another church. And that's New Testament, folks. That's not just the Great Commission of Matthew 28, 19, and 20. That's the book of Acts. And that really ought to be us as well. And so my heart was blessed but challenged. And especially when I heard the history of Baptist missions work in Peru, primarily through the lips of the Stillwells, the elder Stephen Stillwell, and then his son Jonathan, who teaches Baptist history of Peru in the Bible College. Just to think that really the first independent Baptist entered Peru in the 1930s in very small numbers, and eventually it wasn't really until the 50s that force grew to nine families, and the numbers began. And some of that would have been Judy Folks and her family growing up, the Taylor family. But by 1965, even though the gospel had been taken there by independent Baptists in the 1930s, by 1965, they still only had five churches. So 30 years of labor and only five established churches and five more infant churches in, as Steve Stillwell put it, in embryonic phases. So 10 churches, if you will, by 1965. From 1965 to 1980, those five, really 10 almost churches, grew to 50 churches. Progress, but slow progress from 1965 to 1980. Between 1980 and 1990, those 50 churches, though, grew to 300 churches. And they began to multiply. And now they, you know, don't have the exact statistics, but now a very conservative number is just from the fruit of Baptist and missions work, there are over 500 churches that are the fruit of their labors and those who have then followed in their footsteps. And what a phenomenal thing it is, probably it's more like 600 or 700. That was a conservative number. Why is that? Well, part of what happened in the 1980s was persecution. If you know anything about the history of Peru in the 1980s, it was a horrible place. The Shining Path were terrorists who were killing people left and right. They estimate that over 25,000 people were killed by the terrorists, the Shining Path, and other organizations like them. But God used persecution and terrorism and difficulty and problems and those types of things in Peru to bring a lot of people to Christ. The other thing that happened is that they then also started other ministries. They started Bible colleges. And those Bible colleges grew, and radio ministries that then got the gospel to more people. Training of leadership became very important. The camp ministry became very important. And God used all of those things to help nurture the growth of these churches. And so as a result of that, and just the fact that each new church was started with this Great Commission DNA, resulted in them starting churches that started churches that started churches. And so it was thrilling to me to see that, and at the same time a challenge to me. And I hope a challenge to us, that we realize that it's not just the responsibility of a missionary sent to Peru to evangelize or to disciple or to help plant a church or reproduce a church. It's the responsibility of every child of God. And so may we have that same kind of burden for that robust commitment to the gospel, to the Great Commission that I saw there firsthand in Peru. Would you pray with me? Actually, I'm not going to close in prayer. I think we have somebody that is planning on praying. Tim Spickler is going to come and close our service in prayer. Would you stand together? And let me just say, if you have more questions for me, I'll be out there in the foyer. Some of you that are on Facebook who've seen my pictures there have said, now, are you going to explain every picture you put on Facebook? I didn't do that. It may seem like I did, but I didn't do that. And so if you have additional questions, I would love to be able to answer those questions for you tonight. Tim, would you close in prayer, please?